From Paran to Parkdale, you're listening to Southern FM.
Well, it's time for the space show, so please stay tuned for the latest in space news and features, because this is the space show with a bit of different music than usual.
Ignition sequence starts.
As if each arm's long. Planet Earth, man is dead in this place. I look down on every race when I'm in space. VIP invitation, so you can't come along. It's just me, Buzz, and that other one. We get an Apollo 11 and head to the heavens. In terms of transport, it's an irregular method. And telecoms are expensive. We haven't got a landline. That's one giant phone bill for mankind. Who produces the banginest tunes? It's Neil Armstrong, the man in the moon. I said, who produces to take away the doubt you got until you drop them like the hottest baked potato. Screw the rumors that the moon is made of cheese. All that whole space waste campaign is make-believe. Claiming there's no way that we could have planned it. We could be leaving the planet without it leaving us stranded. So let me be blunt and candid. You Egypt's a man and ain't even speaking my language. You just mean and pathetic, claiming that we were pretending. But I ain't even offended. To face it, space dick, the eagle has landed. Who produces the banginest tunes? It's Neil Armstrong, the man.
Well, one guess what our major topic is this evening. Yes, Neil Armstrong and that particular song in a style I don't particularly like, but nonetheless, it's relevant. It's by Dan Bull. Well, welcome to the Space Show, which is presented by members of the Space Association of Australia. Hello, I'm Andrew Rennie, and on Mission Control, we have Jay. On this evening's The Space Show, the new film that is about to start screening at IMAX and other cinemas around Melbourne. It's called First Man. It is about Neil Armstrong, the first man to set foot upon the moon. Well, the movie First Man had its Melbourne premiere last night at the IMAX cinema. The Space Show was a guest, and after the screening, we recorded these comments from members of the audience. Hi, would you like to make a few comments about the film for radio?
Alrighty, so we've just seen The First Man by Damien Chazelle. A very visceral experience. It really does place you in the pilot's seat for one of these missions.
We loved it, actually. No, we loved it.
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic. I thought it was great. Yeah, brilliant acting.
No comment.
Shot beautifully. Yeah, absolutely stunning.
Yeah, I thought it was really great.
Great cinematography, loved the visuals, and very great soundtrack. Just really pulled it all together.
It is a fantastic movie based on a true story, and I hope that the younger audience of this generation will appreciate the many feats done years ago in 1969.
It was fantastic and a magnificent recreation of such an important event in human history. And IMAX is the only way to see it. You've really got to see it on the IMAX format to fully appreciate the scope of the production. It was amazing. Amazing film.
Overall, really good film and a great story. And the picture was just amazing, absolutely astonishing.
I just thought it was a great, fantastic movie. Best movie I've ever seen for a long time.
And what were some of the things that impressed you?
Oh, just the visual effects. The acting was great. It's fantastic. Just fantastic.
I was saying that it makes you think about human achievement and human failings. And I think that it's a very thought-provoking film because it was such an important event in human history. And I don't think that we've yet digested the significance of it all. And the other thought is that it'll be a long time, I suspect, before we go back to the moon.
Yes, I thought it was... I liked visually the sense that when he lands and then you see the Earth looking like the moon, it's the first time you really realise the significance that we're on different planets, but we're part of the same cosmos. The reversal of the thinking, I thought, was very well done. And I thought the oral sense of the noise and the different machinery from when it started off in the early 60s and when the machinery, the actual spacecraft looks different. They've already, you know, they're getting things a little bit more modern looking, and the noise, but still the vibration, the sense of the sound of the spacecraft, and that the enclosed space and only being able to see through little windows. And I think on the IMAX you really get that sense, but you're not going to get it on a smaller screen, that quite that internal feeling, what it would have been like to have been an astronaut.
So you'd recommend that people don't wait for it to come on TV to come to the cinema and see it?
I definitely agree with that, and I think the bigger the screen, the better, because it's the sound, it's the way the cinematography works at that level. And although the IMAX might be expensive places to see it, I think it works. It gives it an extra sense of drama and realism. You watch it on your phone, you watch it on your home cinema, it won't look the same. And it's got a terrific soundtrack, not just the musical aspect of the soundtrack, but the sound of the spacecraft itself rattling. And under your feet, when you're sitting in the IMAX, you can feel the ground trembling. You know, and you still can imagine what it would have been like to have been in the spacecraft. So, yes, see it in the cinemas.
Yes, it was okay, a bit slow moving. Oh, so they got the moon a lot quicker. I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Thank you.
I thought it was a pretty accurate description of how amateurish they were at that stage and how lucky they were to pull it off. Yeah, and... Having been to NASA, I know, and knowing somebody who worked on that mission, I can tell you that it was hair-raising. Yeah.
I thought that all that stuff about the space travel, the history of the space mission, was covered much better in the Wright stuff, that Philip Kaufman film from the 1980s. But look, there are some great special effects and some tension there, and sort of told us a little bit about how, as Peter said, how it was done on a wing and a prayer, virtually all the technology, getting those men up into space, riding on those giant rockets and everything. It was very primitive and amateurish in some cases there, so probably lucky they got away with it with that lack of loss of life that they did. It's one of the more people weren't killed in the space program to meet the thing. But look, it's interesting, but as I said, the right stuff covered that NASA space mission and space race much better, I thought.
I thought it really worked as a visceral experience of putting the audience in the spacecraft with the astronauts, just the ghastliness of it and the fear and the noise and everything that absolutely would terrify you to do it, and it made you feel it as much as a film could.
Yeah, I thought it was quite a nice film. I think First Man was interesting. I think Ryan Gosling was a little bit low-key for the role, but similar to Neil Armstrong. I think they covered the family life a little bit too much. I would have liked a little bit more on the way back, leaving the moon and going back home, and that was glossed over quite a lot. I think there are some better space movies than that one, but it was quite an incredible story. And I'll finish by saying, unbelievable opening scene, testing the X-15. That was straight out of the right stuff. Really enjoyed that. It was phenomenal.
The film is magnificent. The pacing of the film on such an amazing adventure is perfectly representative of the type of person that Neil Armstrong was, very calm and well-paced.
Well, I think you get to experience the true drama and terror. Just in the sound design of the film is fantastic. You really feel every movement in that spacecraft.
Comments from the audience as they left the premiere screening of the new movie First Man at the IMAX cinema yesterday evening, where I was a guest of IMAX. Now, joining us from the Space Association of Australia is Len Halperin. He was there last night. Good evening, Len.
Good evening, Andrew. How are you?
Good. Now, we had a discussion earlier on, and we've got different opinions about the movie. What was your take on the movie?
My take on First Man was that it was excellent. I understood what I was going to see, and as I said to you earlier, I don't think I blinked. It was riveting and very, very compelling, and I thought almost flawless. An absolutely brilliant movie.
Mm. Well, I was a bit disappointed that a lot of it was handheld and sort of swaying all over the screen, as it were. Did that put you off at all?
No, not at all. Life is handheld. I don't walk around my days with a fixed camera on a tripod next to me or on a dolly following me around. It was very realistic, and I think it actually added to the value of the movie. And to be very clear, it was a human movie. It wasn't about space per se. It was about the life of one man who found himself in an extraordinary situation, and, of course, his family as well. And that was, to me, the real part of it. The space parts were excellent, but it wasn't an Apollo 13, wasn't a Gravity, it wasn't about space. It was about a man who for 8 years in his life happened to be involved in space.
Mm-hmm. It showed some of his experiences, some of the pivotal ones in his career. But I found interesting the home life.
I found that very interesting. It's really the first time the wider public has gotten to learn about Janet. I guess many of us people that have followed Apollo and know the stories of the astronauts would know a bit about their families. But to see Janet and the boys and the obvious effect that the loss of his daughter had on Neil and the rest of the family was very profound. And the movie was far more about the family than it was about space. But having said that, the space sequences were excellent. In fact, I think the Gemini 8 sequence was absolutely brilliant and arguably even better than the Apollo 11 sequence.
Yeah, I was interested to see that we got some understanding of why it was that eventually Jan and Neil divorced.
The implication from that was that the seeds were sown during this period of the 60s, stemming from the loss of his daughter Karen, all the way up to the distance of the moon landing, and you might think that it was probably a difficult journey from then on. But they didn't divorce for another 30 years, or best part of 30 years. So it was a very interesting situation. But the family situation, and I think the actress who played Janet, Claire Foy, was superb.
Now, you have actually met Neil, and you used to correspond with him, I believe.
Yes, I did. That was only for a year after I met him in Australia, and we did chat via email several times. But since then, I've also gotten to know Rick quite well, and it was very surreal. I almost felt, knowing Rick the way I do, and having met Neil and chatted with him, I almost felt like an intruder upon the family. It was quite a surreal feeling. And to think that little boy running around there is the guy that I'm still friends with and chatting with today. So, yeah, it's a very, very interesting experience.
Mm. So the Neil that was portrayed in the movie, was that the Neil that you knew?
Yes. Yeah, that was exactly the way I imagined him to be. And that's exactly the way he was, basically, when we saw him. He's very personable. Just not demonstrative in emotions, but the meeting I saw him at, he was a raconteur, and he was humorous and engaging. He knew how to hold an audience, but he was just not demonstrative, and he wasn't prone to displays of emotion. And I think the way that Ryan Gosling portrayed it was very on the mark. It was very, very brilliant portrayal.
Yes, we see at one point where he doesn't cry in public, but he retreated to his den or went outside to to suffer that, yeah. To cry and mourn the loss.
And well, it's very interesting. The person I saw the movie with, a psychologist, we found the whole thing very interesting. And that people deal with emotions and traumatic events in different ways. And this was probably just Neil's way of coping with things. He was not, all the astronauts in Apollo admitted that their families paid a heavy price for the men's involvement in the program. But having said that, if that was the baseline, then it clearly comes across that Neil was a devoted father. And I think the way Ryan portrayed that in the movie was very well done.
Some of the people in those vox pops we just heard commented on the sound, not just the dialogue but, and the music, but also the sound effects. Did you find them effective?
Yes, I did. The sound effects added to the realism. I think that if it is likely to garner any awards at all, and I actually think that the two lead actors are standouts for awards, but I think it's certainly going to do some damage in the sound and music category. The sound effects were superb, even from the opening sequence. Now, you and I have seen the movie, so I've got to be careful about spoilers here, but the way the director brought sound effects and music effects together in each scene, I thought was a standout feature of the movie.
Well, okay. Any last comment on the film?
Yes, I just want to reiterate the point that it's a human story, and it's about one man and his family. The movie involves a lot of space, but this is one bone I have to pick with the presenter last night, Alan Duffy from Swinburne. He said, we're going to see a film about Apollo 11. Well, I tell your listeners that no, it's not a film about Apollo 11. It's a film about Neil Armstrong, who happened to do Apollo 11, amongst other things, including Gemini 8 and flying the X-15. So be aware that you're not going to see a space movie per se. You're going to see a very, very human story about a man and his family. And the space effects in it are very well done. Close to the best space effects I've ever seen in any movie.
One thing I did find hard to catch on to was who was who. I mean, I know the characters, but sometimes identifying, you know, who were they talking to? Who was it? I thought that could have been better defined.
Yes, I do acknowledge that, but I don't think it's relevant to the understanding of the film. The essence there is that there's a card play of astronauts who all knew each other intimately well, and it wasn't particularly relevant to the plot line of the movie to know who was saying what to do at any given point in time, just to know that they were Neil's astronaut group and his work colleagues, basically. So, other people did remark to me that they weren't sure who was talking to who, but I take that on board. I think that was absolutely acceptable. It didn't affect the movie in any way.
Yes, you still got the point of the man's character.
Yes. It was very centrally about Neil, and he interacted with a whole lot of peers at NASA, but really the movie was still about Neil, and it was his story.
Well, okay. Len, thank you very much for joining us on The Space Show.
My pleasure.
So, we're discussing there with Len Halperin from the Space Association of Australia. He's a committee member about the film First Man. Now, one of the things I sat up in that movie and noticed was a song that they played. And I got quite a shock that it was in there. But it's an Afro. One of the things they were doing was looking at how isolated the astronauts were from what was going on. And we see only what's going on in the rest of the world, the troubles that America had, like Vietnam and the race issues and things, through, well, in some cases, Jan watching the TV. So this song pops up, and it's by Gil Scott-Heron, and it gives an Afro-American view of the Apollo lunar missions. And this was released in 1970, a year after Neil Armstrong walked on the moon.
We have a poem here. It's called Whitey on the Moon. And it was inspired by some whiteys on the moon. So I want to give credit where credit is due. All right. That's it.
A rat done bit my sister Nell with Whitey on the moon. Her face and arms began to swell, and Whitey's on the moon. I can't pay no doctor bills, but Whitey's on the moon. 10 years from now, I'll be paying still while Whitey's on the moon. You know, the man just upped my rent last night, cause Whitey's on the moon. No hot water, no toilets, no lights, but Whitey's on the moon. I wonder why he's upping me, cause Whitey's on the moon. Well, I was already giving him 50 a week, and now Whitey's on the moon. Taxes taking my whole damn check. The junkies make me a nervous wreck. The price of food is going up. And as if all that crap wasn't enough, a rat done bit my sister Nell with Whitey on the moon. Her face and arms began to swell, and Whitey's on the moon. Was all that money I made last year for Whitey on the moon? How come I ain't got no money here? Whitey's on the moon. You know, I just about had my fill of Whitey on the moon. I think I'll send these doctor bills, air mail special. To Whitey on the moon.
Some years later, Gil Scott-Heron explained this song, and then he read it as a poem.
The truth is that the politics that we discuss are not partisan politics in terms of Democrat or Republican. I am a member of the Common Sense Party. And for the longest kind of a time, I have felt as though people who said that they did not care anything about politics or were not interested in it were making a political statement in and of itself. The new poetry that evolved in our society concerned the fact that folks wanted to use both words that people could understand as well as talk about ideas that people could understand. One such poem, at least an early poem of ours that went in that direction, concerned the fact that millions and millions of dollars are continually sent into outer space while we continue to face the same problems here on the ground. Poem said, a rat done bit my sister Nell with Whitey on the moon, and her face and arms began to swell, and Whitey's on the moon. I can't pay no doctor bills, but Whitey's on the moon. 10 years from now, I'll be paying still while Whitey's on the moon. You know the man just upped my rent last night? Because Whitey's on the moon. No hot water, no toilets, and no lights, but Whitey's on the moon. I wonder why he's upping me. Because Whitey's on the moon? I was already giving him 50 a week, and now Whitey's on the moon. Taxes taking my whole damn check. The junkies make me a nervous wreck. The price of food is going up. And as if all that crap wasn't enough, a rat done bit my sister Nell with Whitey on the moon. Her face and arms began to swell, and Whitey's on the moon. Was all that money I made last year for Whitey on the moon? How come I ain't got no money here? Whitey's on the moon. You know, I just about had my fill of Whitey on the moon. I think I'll send these doctor bills, air mail special, to Whitey on the moon.
Talking about the movie, First Man, about to start screening at IMAX next Thursday, I think it is. Not tomorrow, but a week's time. And if you want to know more, we've got some more about Apollo coming up in the space show here.
Southern FM, the sounds of the Bayside.
But let's return back to Neil Armstrong, the first man. Well, we love parodies here on the Space Show, and you'll have no trouble recognizing the origin of this parody. It's by F. Clint, and it's called Neil Armstrong Tribute Song.
Ground control to Neil Armstrong. Control to Neil Armstrong. What you've built is what our passion blossoms on. Ground control to Neil Armstrong. In 1969, 3,069, we've crossed the Milky Way, and 4,069, but we'll never Then as it grew from that toy you deployed, you're a hero for any boy, any girl, anyone who enjoys to expand the world with knowledge and love. You held out your glove, and when push comes to shove, with this vision, who could ever yawn? One large step for you was one large step for us. Take your place. Forget about the space race. We'll go on with a bigger cause. We've made our trivial problems far too shown. What you've built is what our passion blossoms on. Let's hope this passion in us never slows. What you've done is what our passion blossoms on. So here we go.
Eric Jones is the editor of the Apollo Lunar Surface Journal. He lives in Wodonga, right here in Victoria. The Apollo Lunar Surface Journal is a compendium of everything you'd ever want to know, pretty much, about the Apollo program. And in particular, exactly what was said and when was said during the missions. Peter Arwood caught up with Eric and had this discussion about Neil Armstrong and Aldrin and a few of the other things related to it.
So I guess two of the most sort of interesting characters that people would probably be interested in is Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin. It seems from sort of the outside world that they had sort of a strange kind of a cooperative, productive relationship as crew members of Apollo 11. I think amiable strangers was Mike Collins's description of them. How did you find them 20 years after having landed on the moon? And did they seem chummy? Did they seem distant?
We spent 3 days together in a hotel in Santa Fe. And Neil is an extremely thoughtful, careful speaker. He said at one point that when we were talking about the landing and the operations in the LEM during the landing, that at 20 years after the fact, he was not going to remember a lot of it. And if I could give them a day or two in the simulator, they might be able to help more. But we both understood that that wasn't going to happen. Buzz is an interesting character. I don't quite know what to say about Buzz. He certainly made a sincere effort to help with the project. But after we finished, I was reluctant to write to him, to email, once that came along, to ask questions, because he seemed to be a little more cautious or a little more distant or something like that. Whereas Neil, Jack, and Dave Scott, and Alan Bean continued to be marvelous sources. Dave and Alan still are.
Another interesting character, unfortunately, who's also recently left us, is Ed Mitchell. He obviously walked on the moon in Apollo 14 with Alan Shepard. But he, post-Apollo, and I guess around before the Apollo, he had a strong interest in other sort of less hard-nosed engineering math type of subjects. Did you get a bit of an insight into him and what his projects were about, and how was your sense of Ed?
I spent a week with Ed in his Florida home, and then a few months later spent another week with him. I purposefully didn't raise any of those things, because that's what I wasn't about, nor did I ask Dave Scott about the stamp business. It simply wasn't my job. Ed had a good grasp of the spacecraft and was extremely helpful with that stuff. And because Shepard wasn't participating, he did his best to help me understand the teamwork that went on. Others have said that Shepard wasn't overly interested in the geology, and I don't think there's any great secret about that. It wasn't until Jack told me that not long before the mission, it wasn't until close to the mission that Shepard realized he really needed to get up to speed on the geology. And Ed was actually a bit defensive about that, he thought they'd done a marvelous job. And each of the crews had their strengths. Ed and Al in particular took wonderful photographs. Their pictures are probably better than most of the other crews. They sampled what was there. They didn't make it to the rim of Cone Crater, but it's not clear that they could have done any better than they did. I think Ed had a better idea of where the crater was, having been on that side of the spacecraft as they came in. But Alan was the commander, and he wanted to go over that way, and Ed thought they maybe ought to edge a little bit further to the left, but hey.
So I assume you probably have read most or all of the their biographies or autobiographies that they've done. I'm particularly thinking of Jim Hansen's Neil Armstrong, First Man, is very well regarded. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I have read either the ones the astronauts themselves have written, and I certainly agree that the one that Mike Collins did is by far the best. And I have read First Man. In some cases, have offered to do unacknowledged reading of drafts. That has not happened for many of them. And there are some cases, which I won't be specific on, where some of the factual material isn't right.
Yeah, I guess that's always possibly going to be a problem with people's memories and recollections and viewpoints. Two people in the one room can understand a conversation differently.
Yeah, absolutely. And the older they get, the further away they get from the missions, the shakier the memories are. When Charlie and I were watching Charlie Duke from 16 and I were watching the video at some point, I asked him, "Are you back there?" And he said, "Yes, he was." I'm sure they all have particular memories that come back to them. But unless they, none of them, I suspect, had watched the films as often or as recently as I had.
I guess, well, it's more over half their lifetime ago, and I guess there's other things that have happened since, and like all of us, our memories. So tell me about you Ed, Eric. What age were you when the missions on the moon were taking place, and did you pay much attention at that time?
I was in graduate school at Madison, Wisconsin, in my mid-20s, and there was nothing else of any great importance in my life at that time except for Apollo. The astronomy department, where I was a graduate student, received a phone call from a local newspaper type wanting to talk to one of the professors about Apollo. And they all ducked, and the secretary of the department passed them on to me. And so I was cited as Professor Eric Jones, which I was certainly not at the time. So I was very interested in Apollo. On the day of the Apollo 11 landing, my wife and I invited some friends over to watch it with us, and we suggested they bring some potluck. Bring a dish, as I suppose the Aussies would put it. It eventually grew to 45 people in a three-room apartment with three TVs scattered around, fans in every window because it was midsummer in Madison, hot and humid. My thesis advisor and I went out to get some more beer while we were waiting for Neil and Buzz to go outside. But when we got back, they were about to go out, and the conversation just went dead quiet, and we were all glued to the TV and were for 3 hours, something like that. It was a wonderful evening.
Peter Irwood was in conversation with Eric Jones, the editor of the Apollo Lunar Surface Journal, and Eric comes from Wodonga.
Hi, this is Mark Holden, and you're listening to 88.3 Southern FM.
This is The Space Show with Andrew Rennie and Jay. Now, we will return back to the first man and Neil Armstrong. That Apollo 11 landing and Neil Armstrong and the other things related to Apollo have had a great effect on popular culture. And it pops up in all sorts of strange places. For example, Louise Gold, when she wanted to do a song about her love, Oh My Love is the song, she timed it by the heartbeat recording of Neil Armstrong as he set foot on the moon. So here is the result, Louise Gold, Oh My Love.
Oh my love, for the first time in my life, my eyes are wide open. Oh my lover, for the first time in my life, my eyes can see. I see the window, I see the trees, everything is clear in my heart. Clear in our world. Oh, my lover, for the first time in my life, my mind is wide open. Oh, my lover, for the first time in my life, my mind.
Gold, Oh My Love. And that's it for The Space Show this week.